The university asked him to excise the section of his lecture dealing with Islamic anti-Semitism. When he refused to do so, he was invited to appear before a panel of four professors who insisted he remove these passages. A lecture on Islamic anti-Semitism, so the argument went, might lead to violent reactions from well-organized Muslim student groups. Similar things have happened to me. When in April of 2003, I was invited by Yale University as keynote speaker on the topic of Islamic terrorism and anti-Semitism, the mission against modernity, unquote, there was such an outpouring of protest that the organizers changed the program. The original title of one of the panels, Islamic Jihad, a case of global non-state terrorism, was changed to Global Non-State Terrorism, unquote. In addition, a speaker was added to the podium whose sole qualification was that of being president of the local Palestine Right to Return Coalition, unquote. At least I was able to give my talk. Not so in March of 2007 at this university. Here, too, the term Islamic anti-Semitism stymied what should have been a lively debate already in March. Following emails by some Muslim students, my lecture title, Hitler's Legacy, Islamic Anti-Semitism in the Middle East, unquote, was changed to The Nazi Legacy, Export of Anti-Semitism into the Middle East, unquote. This proved to be a futile semantic gesture. On the day of my arrival in Leeds, the university administration canceled my talk on security grounds, unquote. No one, including the Muslim students, had threatened violence. As before in Utrecht, freedom of speech was suspended, in my opinion, by an act of preemptive self-censorship. Both university administrations probably believed that they were meeting the wishes of their numerous Muslim students in suspending a lecture about Islamic anti-Semitism. The erroneousness of this approach becomes clear when we realize that Muslims are criticizing Islamic anti-Semitism as well. Why do we hate the Jews? Asked Saudi columnist Hussein Shubakshi in a London-based Arabic daily in May of 2005. The extent of this tremendous hatred of the Jews is baffling. If we know the true reason why the Jews have become the reason for every catastrophe, then we will be able to understand the idea of dividing human beings into groups, unquote. In January of 2006, Tunisian philosopher Mezri Haddad complained that Arab public opinion, quote, has found in anti-Semitism the perfect catalyst for all its narcissistic wounds and social, economic, and political frustrations. The fundamentalist had, he continued, reduced the Quran to a case of nauseating anti-Semitism, but it must be admitted, quote, that some Quranic verses, intentionally isolated from their historical context, have contributed even more to the anchoring of anti-Semitic stereotypes in Arab-Muslim mentalities. This petrification of the Arab-Muslim mentality can be reversed, so Haddad, but this would require intellectual audacity, unquote, on the part of Islamic scholars. Again quoting, since they cannot purge the Quran of its potentially anti-Semitic gross, they must closely examine this corpus with hermeneutical reasoning, unquote. While some Muslims support the universal struggle against anti-Semitism, other Muslims want to prevent any mention, let alone any public discussion, of Islamic anti-Semitism. It is this latter group that has profited, at least in the beginning, from the actions of Utrecht and Leeds universities. The British historian L.A. Kadouri, whom I admire a lot, stated that, quote, moral integrity and scholarly vigor were always complementary, unquote, and I subscribe to this point of view. Today, an increasing number of anti-Islamist Muslims are complaining about the well-meaning, unquote, behavior of Western academics, which lacks moral integrity and scholarly vigor. Quote, when Westerners make politically correct excuses for Islamism, states, for example, Tawfiq Hamid, a former member of the Egyptian Islamist organization Gamaa al-Islamiyah, it actually endangers the lives of reformers and in many cases has the effect of suppressing their voices, unquote. And he warns that, again quoting, without confronting the ideological roots of Islamism, it will be impossible to combat it, unquote. A reality that not only governments need to get into their heads. Islamism is not motivated by a concept of reason, but by a cult of death. It does not strive for emancipation, but for oppression. It uses the flag of anti-colonialism to promote anti-Semitism. It is true that today there is no other anti-capitalist or anti-Western movement that is able to mobilize and influence so many people. Bin Laden's latest message builds on this reality, but it is for this very reason all the more essential for every responsible person to draw an inseparable line between a concept of change that is rooted in the traditions of the Enlightenment and emancipation and a concept of change that is aimed in a fascist way at destroying the development of societies and the freedom of the individual. You can be in favor of or against Islamism and fascism, but you cannot be anti-fascist and pro-Islamist at the same time. Again, I've been reading a lecture given at the University of Leeds on October 10th, 2007 by German author Matthias Kunzel. The lecture's title is Hitler's Legacy, Islamic Anti-Semitism in the Middle East, The Impact of the Muslim Brotherhood. Dr. Kunzel is also the author of the book Jihad and Jew Hatred, Islamism, Nazism, and the Roots of 9/11. The text of this lecture will be reproduced in its entirety in the description to this broadcast. This concludes For the Record program number 622, update on the Nazi origins of Islamic fascism. This is being recorded on January 27th of 2008. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.
Hey, well, I don't have a clue. As usual, what Dave was talking about. I wasn't paying very close attention. I hope you took notes, because there's going to be a quiz next week, actually, on Dave Emery's program. You can get a decent grade if you answer any one of the following to most of the questions. I'm going to slip you the answers, okay? Just write them down on an index card when you take the quiz. The answer might be Bush, Cheney, Chomsky, or globalization. All right? The answer will not be hermeneutical. Well, sorry. Yeah, this is Old Codger here, WFMU, East Orange, WXHD, and Mount Hope. And I'm here to bring the hate. Yes, the hate. And lots of good music, too. On 78 RPM discs only. So, I'm warning you right now, you whippersnappers, you. If you are allergic to surface noise, okay, if you don't like the surface noise that comes from a shellac disc, then you go away. Turn on one of your hippie rock and roll stations, or go listen to your smooth jazz or your Disney tweens, or go to hell. Just go to hell, where global warming is a real way of life, not just a political pose. So, anyway, Old Codger here for an hour, playing plenty of good music on 78, and we're going to start out this week with Blind Willie Johnson.
Oh, lay that down. Lay that down. Pick your butt and turn around and lay that down. Lay that down. If you trust in never, I will show you. I'll take your burden, turn along and leave it there. If this word from you had told of its silver and its gold, and you have to get along, Margaret Brown, Margaret Brown, just remember in his words how he feeds his little bird. Take your burden, turn along and leave it. Leave it down.
Oh, leave it down.
Oh, leave it down. Take your bite and turn around and leave it. Oh, leave it down.
If you just can never die,
well,
surely
every day you out. Take your bite and turn around and
leave it there.
If your body suffer pain, and your health you can't regain, and your soul is almost sinking in the spell, and in the spell. Jesus knows the pain you feel. He can save and he can heal.
Take your
bite and
tell
the Lord and
leave it.
Leave it down.
Leave it down.
I'm ready to go. Take a hell of a fight.
that God in heaven and the prayer, he will make a way for you, then he'll lead you safely through. Take your burden to the Lord and leave it, leave it there, leave it there.
Who's there and knocking at my door at this hour of night? Why, it's old Sam Brown, the man I loved and screwed me down. Who brought the fruit and flowers sweet when he laid in bed? Who chased the fever when the doctor gave him up for dead? How I love to hear him say, I'm sorry, dear. Now that he's near, with one half-dead friend, I'll simply say to him, I love you, why? But to stay to wait alone, no use reviving. Love's so sweet, long. I know this day you'll be sad and blue. But forgiveness ever paid, man, you're 1 year overdue. Well, for you, there's only one thing that's left for you to go. And may the sweet and low keep you in on for doing it wrong. If you went no way to roam, I put the children in the collar home. I love you, one, but to stay the way to go. Number 12 on the dice. I love you, one, but you made a way to
know. Thank you.
That's some boogie-woogie piano there from Albert Ammons. That was called the Sweet Patootie Blues. And before that, we heard from Joe Daniels and his Hot Shots and Drum Boogie. That's Joe Daniels playing the drums with his quartet. Before that, we heard the immortal Dolly Kay. She's immortal, you know. She'll live forever, and so will her music. We heard I Loved You Once by Dolly Kay. And the program opened up the Old Codger Radio Extravaganza, the Immortal Music Hall Old Codger Show of 78 RPM Spectacular Cavalcade. The Philco Cheap Cigar Boudoir opened up with Blind Willie Johnson and Take Your Burden to the Lord and Leave It There. I'm the Old Codger here till 8 o'clock. It's not enough time. I've been asking him to give me 2 hours or 3 hours or let me program the entire day. So they got this fundraiser coming up next week. I don't know that I'm terribly interested raising money for this station. And they informed me that I can raise the money when I do the Old Codger Show in 2 weeks, but that I am not allowed to keep it. So, I do all this work for free, year-round. And the one time we get to rake in the big bucks, I'm not allowed to take a cut. This is what passes for progressive thinking around here. This is what happens when you get in bed with hippies. For one thing, it's a very crowded bed. For another, they smell funny. And then, the hippies, they just don't understand incentive. They think everybody should work for free. They're a bunch of stinking commies, if you ask me. Here I thought old Joe Stalin was dead, and Karl Marx was deader. But their ideas live on here at WFMU. I need the money. That's what I'm saying. You gotta understand, I'm so old that my Social Security expired decades ago. The bureaucrats, the damn bureaucrats at the Essex County Division said I'd received more money in Social Security payments than the entire town of East Orange had paid in. So, they told me one day, they said, your benefits have expired. Yeah, my benefits expired, but I haven't. So, I'm supposed to raise money for this radio station, but how can I? I'm going to have a big problem. I'm at a great disadvantage, you know, because my listenership is severely limited by the fellow who precedes me on the air. Dave Emery chases away anyone who loves good music. So when I come on the air at 7 o'clock, there's just two people listening. My friends Blossom and Rummy Delbarden. So I have to build an audience for an hour. And then by 8 o'clock, when there's six people listening, the show's over. And that Tom something or other comes on. Now, he's not as bad as Dave Emery. Though this Tom fella's music leaves something to be desired. And I don't understand his strange sense of humor. Anyway, as far as this fundraising goes, that goes on for 2 weeks, I can't believe that there's that many people. Dupes. Suckers who would pay for the crap that this station offers. You can hear more harmonious sounds emanating from the repair bay of any muffler shop. Somebody getting gallbladder surgery without anesthesia would warble more pleasant sounds than what passes for singing on this godforsaken frequency. Well, I just wanted to make that clear where I stand on this whole fundraising thing that starts next week. Called it a marathon or something. Well, I'll do my marathon show in 2 weeks, and you can bet before my program, and Blossom's going to do it with me, we're both going to get plushed to the scuppers before the show. Yeah, that's the only way we can deal with it. Okay, we go back to the music. Here's the immortal. See, everybody in this program's immortal, including me. It is a K-Star.
Not much to look at, nothing to see. lucky to be. I've got a man, he's crazy for me. He's funny that way. Can't save a dollar, can't save a cent. He'd never holler, he'd live right in a tent. I've got a man, he's crazy for me. He's funny that way. But I'm never gonna leave him. Never gonna.
I chanced to meet him at a party, the kind of party some people call arty. And I was drawn to him a fraction. He was the center of attraction. Though I don't often do such a thing, this suave aristocrat induced me to his flat. He had such perfect grace, such savoir faire. 'Twas like a poem when he offered me a chair. His every fond caress, the acme of finesse, he was a gentleman. He improvised as if it were planned, and with baronial distinction kissed my hand. To watch him pour the wine, enchantingly divine, he was a gentleman. One felt so sanctified just sitting by him. His every gesture was a perfect art. There's not a quality I would deny him. Now here's the most peculiar part. Out of the sky, out of the void, he gave an exhibition best described by Freud. He suddenly inclined to pinch at my believe me, he was a gentleman. I was surprised. I was amazed. Why, the man's peculiar actions had me dazed. I took my coat and hat, and then I told him that he was no gentleman, indeed. He called a cab without a word, and then admitted that his conduct was absurd. Of course, I realized when he apologized, he was a gentleman. When we were in the cab, he really did astound me. His self-restraint was hard to understand. He didn't try to put an arm around me. He didn't even hold my hand. Then pretty soon, we reached my door. I thought that all there isn't any more. Without the least excuse, I felt a gentle, oh, dear.
Thank you. magical wonderful. When the lights are beautiful.
Yeah, that's a very rare record, you know. There's only one copy. Only one copy left in the world. And I got it. Yes, I've checked everywhere. Nobody else has it except me. That was Lillian Holt. Vivian Holt. It's so rare, I don't even remember who sang it. Vivian Holt and Lillian Rosedale. And it's called When the Shadows Softly Come and Go. Move this microphone here, get more comfortable. Hurting my back, leaning forward into this microphone. Ambrose and his orchestra did Deep Henderson, the tribute to Fletcher Henderson, and Beatrice Lilly, she sang He Was a Gentleman. And we played the 78 before that by the André Musette Orchestra. It was a polka. It was called the Pretzel Bender Polka. And K-Star sang She's Funny That Way. Well, I heard from Sam. Sam called, my buddy Sam. Lives out in Far Rockaway. He called in. He said he's looking for this Hobo Jack Turner 78 that I played a few weeks ago. And I told him, you know, you could buy it at the record store. But unfortunately, Sam, all the record stores are out of business. You see, nobody cares about records anymore. Except me. Sam. So, the record stores are out of business. It's a good thing that I stocked up while they were still open. Yeah, I took out lots of their inventory, 78s, and I've got them all, enough to last me for decades. Then I just go back and listen to them all over again. So, if you, listening out there, have the Hobo Jack Turner, this is no relation to Brian Turner, if you have the Hobo Jack Turner 78 RPM record, you contact Sam. He's a good man. He will pay you, who knows, could pay you $5 for that record. So, I'm here, the old codger, and I'm healthy. That's right, I had my annual blood test. Today, they got the results, and as every year, the results of my blood test are the same. They discovered that my blood is red, and it's hot. So, I'm going to play 70 RPM records now, like they're going out of style, until 8 o'clock. Then Sharpie comes in. Meanwhile, we have something here. Let's see, we got Coot Grant and Kid Wilson. Oh, yes, I've been digging up their old 78s lately and rediscovering. I haven't heard some of these in 40 or 50 years. So, here's Coot Grant and Kid Wilson.
I'm a ducker, he's the best vaccinator in town. He has beauty for many miles around.
He doesn't prove it.
He vaccinated Sister Hannah last Sunday morning. When her husband came home, she had packed and gone.
I'll find a doctor, you're the best vaccinator in town. Now I'll find a doctor, you're the best vaccinator in town.
What kind of man is that?
Don't vaccinate me on my arm, I'll wash and iron, said Miss Brown. Where can I vaccinate you, said the doctor with a frown. She said, well, doctor, seldom I sit down. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town.
Yes, Lord.
He's a vaccinator, yes, he's a vaccinating hound. When he sticks his needle into your skin, you can tell the world is too bad, Jim. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town. Now our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town.
Tell the truth.
Don't none of you sisters turn our good doctor down. He vaccinated Sister Lou and Sister So-and-so. Every time I seen him, they wanted some more. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town. Now our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town.
Yeah?
He's so easy, he never makes a sound.
No, no he don't.
He take his big needle, put it in his hand. He knows how much each sister can stand. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town. It looks like all the women just run him down.
Sure enough.
He told Sister Jenkins and Sister Mary Brown, if you miss this vaccinating, ain't a nothing to be found. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town. Now our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town. Don't laugh at him, because he ain't no clown. If you don't think his vaccinating is tight, just call around his office most any night. Our family doctor is the best vaccinator in town.
Rosie the Redskin was an Indian who was keen on trucking and lending. With Sitting Bull, she was sitting pretty. Oh, but she left him flat for the great big city. Pretty Rosie the Redskin, she's knocking them dead. Ever since she left the reservation, swing it going to her head. She took her papoose and went on the loose. When she gave the chief her resignation, she went out to raise the dues. All night swinging on her pins, wearing out her dancing moccasins. Then when she gets sleepy, she hits the hay in a Broadway TV. Oh, Rosie the Redskin, she's painting her town. Then she got a taste of syncopation. How you gonna hold her down?
Thank you. Virginia teacher said it wasn't in your V.I.G.I. Hoping I do forget an R in V.I.G.I. Never forget my pa and ma, I'm gonna spell you right or left. But if I'm wrong, I hope and trust you'll cover me up with the sunshine of Virginia. The sunshine of Virginia is in your eyes.
Man, those were the Brock Sisters. Of course, you know that by now, because I played them so often. They have so many wonderful 78 RPM recordings, the Brock Sisters. That was called, I've never played that one before on the radio. That was called Come With Me, Through the Sunshine of Virginia. Before that was Hal Kemp and his orchestra with Workout, instrumental. And Midge Williams and her Jazz Jesters did Rosie the Redskin. And a song by Coot Grant and Kid Wilson was called Our Family Doctor. It was about health care. Yeah, sure. Well, it's the old codger here. Till 8 o'clock on WFMU. We're in Jersey City. And, you know, I get a letter from somebody who thinks that I have no hobbies. The guy's name was Jackson or something, who wrote to me and says he's wondering if I have any hobbies. That these people who listen to the show, they presume that I am obsessed with 78 RPM records, that I think of nothing else. Well, my lady friend Blossom knows this is not true, that I'm obsessed with 78 RPM discs. I think about, there's plenty of other things. I think about replacing the worn needles on my Victrola. I think about which solvents will best clean a grooved shellac surface. I think about which padlocks, security, you know. I think about which types of padlocks are the most, the best to lock up my ukulele Ike demo discs so thieves cannot steal them and hold them for ransom. I think about dinner every once in a while. I like to have a drink and I like to have a drink and listen to some Hank Williams platters. And I have been known to sleep. And, in fact, I watched television for a little bit back in 1958. So, yes, I do have hobbies. In fact, look, here's a list of my hobbies. My friend Oogie Wawa and I, we like to take our shotguns and go gazelle hunting. Did you ever have a fresh gazelle? Gazelle on the hoof, the meat is very tender. In fact, I have 6 stuffed gazelle heads in my den. Or I would, if I had a den. I am also a passionate recycler of... I recycle. I'm a passionate recycler of duct tape. I put it back on the roll. This is a very consuming passion. It takes a lot of time. You've got to be very careful. It's very tough. Let's see, what else? Other hobbies. I'm building a replica of Sophie Tucker. Out of... I'm building a replica of Sophie Tucker out of melted Gumby figures. Yes, you know why? I hated Gumby. I hated Gumby. He was a scalawag. He ran off with my cleaning lady, Gumbelina. May Gumby rot in hell. You can quote me on that. And I'm currently embarked on a long-term project of reading the Bible backwards. It makes more sense that way. Because then it has a happy ending. Because nobody's home. Except me and my maker. So, you can see I have hobbies. I'm a very well-rounded individual. Wouldn't you agree? I thought you would. So, back to the music. We only have 10 minutes left to play some more 70 RPM records. Here's one from Furman and Nash on WFMU with the old codger.
One fellow would try to cuddle up to her, but she would cry. Ma, he's making eyes at me. Ma, he's awful nice to me. Ma, he's almost breaking my heart. I'm beside him. Mercy, let his conscience guide him. Ma, he wants to marry me. Be my honeybee. Every minute he gets older. Now he's leaning on my shoulder. Ma, he's kissing me. Lily was so good, everybody could tell. You never see her wrong. He'd always stay at home. All the neighbors knew little Lily too well. Oh, when the boys would call, they'd hear her yell. Ma, he's climbing on my knee. Ma, he's telling jokes to me. Ma, he's almost breaking my heart. Hurry, will ya? Ma, he's getting too familiar. Ma, make him stop teasing me. He won't let me be. If I love him, I may lose him. Still, it's brutal to refuse him. Ma, he's kissing me. Like jelly, when he laughs, he shakes all over. Ma, he's kissing me.
No one knows how hard I tried to follow teacher's plan. I did it till the day that I became a married man. But since that day, by golly, folks, I cannot understand. How did Georgie do it? Why doesn't some wise man get up
and explain. Why doesn't he clear up my poor muddled brain? Why doesn't history tell us the mystery? Why doesn't somebody do it? I'd like to think the tales about him were true, but if he was a married man, I leave it to you. Say, how could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie? When I was a kiddie, we had an old cherry tree. It was Father's pride and joy. One day he went to town, I thought I'd chop it down, just like Mrs. Washington's dear boy. When he came back home that night and missed the cherry tree, I said I did it, and he licked the stuffing out of me. Yet Georgie got away with it, as easy as could be. How did Georgie do it? Why doesn't some wise man get up and explain? Why doesn't he clear up my poor muddled brain? Why doesn't history tell us the mystery? Why doesn't somebody do it? He captured New York just to see all the sights, but how about those weekend trips to Washington Heights? Say, how could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie? Why doesn't some wise man get up and explain? Why doesn't he clear up my poor muddled brain? Why doesn't history tell us the mystery? Why doesn't somebody do it? Oh, Georgie knew a thing or two, I'll agree. The Independence Declaration says liberty. So how could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Daisy, Daisy, Daisy.
I got nervous that the record was skipping in the middle, but I hit the cartridge and got the needle in, back in the groove. That was the Duncan sisters, Rosetta and Vivian Duncan, and a song called Dawning. And before that was, let's see this, M.J. O'Connell. I don't know what the M and the J stand for. The song was How Could Washington Be a Married Man? Before that was Furman and Nash with Ma, He's Making Eyes at Me. Well, the program's over. I'm terribly sorry. That's it. They only give me 60 minutes. I can only squeeze in, what I have, 12, 15 songs or so. I'm trying to expand the Old Codger Radio Hour into the Old Codger Radio Hour or more. But so far, the management here and the program director are resisting me. So, anyway, this is the Old Codger. Just remember, I'm the man who had his first midlife crisis at 90. And here I am at WFMU programming with these hippies. One of them's coming up next. These people here, I don't know what it is about them. They're shallow. I'm not saying they're one-dimensional. They're zero-dimensional. You may wonder, why do I put up with these poltroons? Why? Week after week. Well, as my good old buddy H.R. Mencken once said when people asked him, he made so much fun of Americans. Why did he live here? And I say, this is why I'm at WFMU. He said, why do people go to zoos? He said, that's what this place is like. Very strange animals. Very strange critters around here. Anyway, stay tuned for Sharpling, second best show on WFMU. This is the old codger saying, this is WFMU. East Orange, WXHD, Mount Hope.
But it's Swales, Governor of Alabama.
Hi, it's Gerald Perlmutter.
Tom Sharpling, Governor of Party.
Hey, Tom, it's Purple Sir.
Hey, Tom, it's Mark Michaels.
This is Richard Clark from Chicago.
What's your name?
Barrington.
And well, what's inside the tube?
Fire. Why? Maurice Kern?
Horrifying.
Hey, Tom, it's Bruce.
Tommy!
Who's this?
Gingivitis.
Gingivitis.
Yes, they have Rick Maloney at the Wawa.
What? I hate you.
It's Peter.
Hey, it's Steinberg.
Mm-hmm.
You are creepy and I'm hanging up on you. Boing.
Roger Devil.
My name is Ollie Farinacci.
I'll say it. You'll hear it. You'll do it. I'll get it. You'll learn it. I'll live with it and you'll die without it.
Smash or trash.
Derek, I'm calling from Tacoma.
Good day.
What's up, Tom? This is Tristan.
Hey, it's Michelle.
Yeah, Tom, this is Jim Riffle. How you doing?
When I get to do the toilet talk now.
The vaudeville of the new century.
My name is Tom Riley. I'm calling from New Zealand.
Hey, man. Right.
Ted, don't stand with that. It's a tentpole. This is a tentpole show.
Hey, this is Ted Leo.
What?
Petey from the future.
Hi, Tom. It's DJ Terry T.
Hey, from Knoxville.
Super caller.
It's Officer Tom.
My name is Mike Sajak.
Get off my phone. I don't care.
Hey, this is Zippy Pants, man.
I'm going to go to bed now, Fofer.
Hey, Tom. It's Gord.
Hey, Gord. How are you?
I was in a band in the early 90s. My name is Jerry Page.
Tom, my name is Jeffrey Ludell. It's a fat, diseased, wild orangutan, isn't it?
The disenfranchised have a home now. I'm the hero of the disenfranchised.
Take a chance on me. We can go dancing.
What's up?